Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And with our first post-Christmas pod, following the games in the Gallagher Premiership, following some other big stories that are going on just now. I'm Tim in the Rugby Dungeon with JB.
Hello, Tim.
And with Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And firstly, we hope you had a lovely festive period with your family. How was yours, guys?
Lovely. I did a rib of beef, as I've documented before on the pod. I made... God knows, I must have made pasta with about 3,000 calories per dish.
Ooh, now you're talking.
Just the oil.
Butter.
Yeah, on Christmas Eve. Oil, butter, parmesan. The only non-fatty carby ingredients that went into it were parsley and garlic.
That's one of your five a day, right?
Exactly right.
If you get enough parsley.
Well, the amount of garlic in there, I could have exceeded my five a day.
Can I just show you the river beef that I bought from the butchers?
Oh, let's see. Look at the ageing.
Oof, the bark, they call that, Phil. Oof. Bark.
Fat beautiful.
Means, fat means flavour.
Oh, yeah. How did that turn out?
Oh, incredible. I just, it turned out like that.
A little
mustard rub, that mustard flour rub that I put all over it.
Did you have a little crisis on Christmas Eve thinking your knives weren't sharp enough and you might need to nip down to B&Q to get a whetstone?
Yeah.
I had that.
Well, you're not far off. That was the ham on Christmas Eve.
Lovely.
The ham on Christmas Eve.
Oh, nice. So, some awesome food.
Now that you're all really chummy with the butcher. Well, you've been chummy with the butcher for a long time.
I used to have a regular feature on my radio show.
Yeah.
Which is quite handy because every Christmas Eve,
so
basically,
corrupt.
I go to the back door to pick up my meat. I don't have to queue with the riffraff.
I remember you telling me that it worked so well having that feature with the butcher. You were thinking of having one with the guy who owns the off-license.
And the Maserati salesman.
Yeah, and also the local dealer. What kind of dealer was that, Tim?
No comment, Your Honour.
Well, now you're mates with the butcher. Can you maybe take my knives around to get sharpened?
Oh, nice, yeah.
It's not a bad idea, that.
I'm sure you could just... You're enough of a customer. I'm sure you could just walk in and go, would you...
Maybe. They're always so busy there. Anyway.
I hope you had a lovely time. And we've got plenty to talk about on this podcast. Firstly, though, just a reminder, we've got lots of new patrons.
Yeah, loads of them. Thank you for joining.
After our special, we peeled back the curtain, showed you how the sausage is made to keep the butcher parlance going, and gave you that little podcast over the festive period to give you a little peek behind the scenes about what we do in our extra podcasts. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, we really appreciate it. It helps keep the lights on, helps us look at the logistics of putting on a Tier 2 tour, which we are looking into with... We're giving serious thought and planning to, so watch this space. Patreon.com/eggchasers and contacteggchasers@gmail.com. We've got a bunch of emails as well.
Loads of emails.
Got loads, which we will pepper through the podcast. But there's one story we've got to start on, gents. Phil, you're always really good details, man. JB and I just kind of... Well, JB has wild opinions, as do I. I sometimes light on detail. You're always across things. So what's going on with Leicester Tigers and a potential salary cap breach?
Well, we don't know very much at the moment. All that we know is there is an investigation going on by Premier Rugby into what is described as historical payments, and historical image right payments via a company, a now defunct company called Worldwide Image Management. That's about it. Now, Borthwick has mentioned something that... he obviously came in March 2020, so he's been in role about 18 months. His suggestion from his statement was that this is happening prior to his involvement, which would make sense based on what we know. What wouldn't make sense is that we know that in 2015, because it was revealed by either the Miners Report or the Dyson Report, that three clubs in 2015 were found guilty of breaches, but they were swept under the carpet, that being Saracens and the implication that the other two, who never commented to...
confirm or deny.
Yeah, never commented, but I think it was 9 of the 10 other clubs, or whatever it was, there was 10 clubs that
denied it,
and three clubs that didn't, which were Saracens, Bath and Leicester Tigers. But that's been dealt with, so that's been swept under the rug.
Yeah.
So what we can infer from that is that these breaches have taken place in between 2015 and 2020, when Borthwick comes in, which is the worst period of Leicester Tigers' history in terms of performances.
Yeah, if they were cheating, they were bad at it.
Well, they were absolutely terrible. It makes me think, do you remember, we used to joke that Saracens had the best accountants in the league.
Yeah.
But then when the Dyson report came out and Saracens basically Saracens' lawyers failed to win a single point in a 100-page report, they had the best accountants in the league, but the worst lawyers in the league. Leicester clearly have the worst accountants in the league, so they better hope they've got some bloody good lawyers.
Well, funny enough, they really do have accountants. The people that run their salary cap, or a bunch of accountants somewhere in Leicester, they don't do it in-house, they get someone else to do it. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, Leicester have always liked using this way of paying their players, using image rights. And there's a good argument to say that every player should be using a proportion of their receiving a proportion of their salary as image rights. They should all have a limited company. I've actually done a video about this, and I can't remember the details, but it just makes sense for some of the players, in fact, almost all of the players, to put a proportion of their pay, which is generated from things like having their image on the club, on the club program, or around the ground, or some such thing. Go into a limited company. That just makes sense.
Well, so it does, but from my reading about this in the past, it can only happen. You can only do that where the image has a value, i.e., so there was a. This is much more common in Premier League football, and also down to Championship level football. And there's been a kind of flip from a tax perspective of this from football, and therefore a wider sporting stance, because players in the Championship were receiving 60% of their salary through image right corporations, so they could avoid tax
exactly. Before we get into the merit of that and the logistics, let's talk about the morality element of it from Leicester's point of view. And I think there's a brilliant email we've got from Rowan, who is a Saracens fan, and this, where Rowan goes with this, is exactly what my first thought was. He says, hi, gents. Blah, blah, blah. I love the show, etc. as a Saracens fan who's obviously just heard the news about the Tigers breach, I have an opinion. As desperately as I wanted it to be either the racists or the Maserati drivers that were being investigated, the fact it was Tigers raised some other questions. For the sake of argument, let's assume Tigers are both guilty and knew what they were doing. Again, we don't know that yet, but let's for the purpose of this assume that is the case.
Hell of an assumption, though, isn't it?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
If you recall, Saracens were asked to open their books after their initial punishment. This is exactly what I thought. To which they said every other club should also open theirs. That's what Saracens said. Understandably, this was voted against by every other club, including Tigers. Therefore, Tigers, who were saved from a painful relegation by the Saracens' punishment, voted to keep their own discretions under wraps whilst putting another club down for similar discretions. This is where there's possibly something. It looks a bit, potentially, if guilty, and if they knew about it, it looks a bit dirtier because they might have known, we're doing a bit of that.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to open our books. Yeah, see you later. We're bottom of the table. You're now below us.
Hang on, but there is one other element of this as well. And it's a salary cap breach potentially, but it's a salary cap breach in a different way to Saracens, because they had an overall breach of how much money they were spending. They were spending too much. This is an unreported salary. So,
but this was part of the Saracens' fine and part of the salary, points deduction, wasn't it?
Sorry, just this is why it's different to Saracens, because they may well have breached the salary cap regulations, and that's exactly why they're doing the interviews, but they might not have breached the salary cap, and it's worth remembering that.
Okay.
Was Maro Itoje's image rights deal not part of the whole Saracens thing?
Sorry, so what I'm saying to him is, like, say if Saracens were at the cap and then Mario Itoje has an extra 800,000, it'd be six million plus 800,000. With Leicester Tigers, it may well be a case that they were spending 5 million. So let's say they're a million underneath the cap, and then they spent another 20,000 on some image rights.
Okay. Yeah.
You see what I mean?
So and they saved the players a bit of tax, which is a net.
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe for Leicester Tigers. I could be wrong. If it was Worcester, I'd be like, well, yeah, that would make sense.
Tax up.
Yeah. But Leicester Tigers, I mean, and that's one of the worst things about Leicester Tigers. They were terrible, even though we all assume that they were spending right up to the salary cap.
But I don't think they were, you know. I don't think they were too last year and the year before.
Just on Rowan's point, which is Leicester Tigers were happy to see, and you know, and Leicester Tigers fans, a lot of them might be feeling a little bit burnt by this, because they might have not taken pleasure, that's not what I mean, but been vociferously shouting, Saracens, get down, get your fine, your books need to open up, we need a full investigation. Then, if guilty, and if knowingly, Leicester Tigers may have kept theirs out of the public eye when they were bottom of the table.
Yeah,
that is potentially dodgy. We don't know the ins and outs, weren't they? Yes,
they were saved for relegation by relegating Saracens.
Again, we don't know the ins and outs. We don't know the guilt. We don't know the knowledge.
Yeah. I think that is really quite an important point here, which is, you know, we need to know exactly what are these breaches. Is it a breach of the cap rather than a breach of the rules? Is it just non-reporting? I mean, if it's over £200,000 of breaches, i.e. over the cap, they're in hot water. You know, like, not just hot water, relegation style hot water. Now, I don't think it will come to that, because if you remember with Saracens, they might not have got relegated. It's the fact that they decided to get relegated because they wouldn't open their books.
Yes.
And now to think that those historic breaches are going to cost this Leicester Tigers team a title is heartbreaking.
Even if there was
relegation, Bath are in the league, so it's fine.
Yeah.
deduct some 50 points, they'll be all right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be...
Sorry, Bath.
Accurate, though.
Imagine getting relegated from the league on the second year that relegation isn't a thing. How heartbreaking.
I'm fascinated to see how this plays out.
Yeah,
because if and it's a very good point. If there is found to be another breach, so this is Leicester breaching after they'd already had their knuckles wrapped in 2015, in the same way that Saracens had their knuckles wrapped in 2015,
and like you say, by a significant amount.
But if it's a significant amount, what do they do? Like, what does the league do?
Well, it's a league that needs to get the house.
Yeah, it is. That's more so than
even Leicester. Because the league messed up the Saracens thing unbelievably. Let's just go through the timeline on that.
And they messed up the 2015 thing.
Yeah. 2015 is the, of all this.
To be fair, there's not much the league doesn't mess up, from TV deals to corporate messaging to media. I mean, if you can mess... In fact, it's incredible. There should be case studies written about this league and widely distributed.
It's actually impressive.
It's astounding. I mean, even the appointment of that old CEO who thought that rugby was invented in Eton. He apparently stood up in a dinner and told the story, it's a lunch actually, about William Webber Ellis picking up the ball for the first time in Eton and scoring. I mean, the clue's in the name.
Was it an away game for rugby, perhaps?
Yes.
Maybe.
Do you know what? If that was the level of detail that he went into...
Fair play. You got the right man.
Webb Ellis did pick up the ball away at Eton. That'd be, I mean, it's completely conceivable. Maybe I owe him a huge apology there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Childs.
But it's like the musical The Producers. Do you know the story where...
Is it when they're meant to fail and they...
Yeah. They try and make a flop because it would...
For tax purposes,
it would actually be more profitable.
Okay.
But it ends up making loads of money.
Looking at their appointments, I can actually see that being... maybe. So the league needs to sort this out, because the Saracens debacle was absolutely that, a debacle. They spent an awful lot of money on very, very highly qualified legal minds.
And it took ages with no communication.
Actually, give the devil its due. They were good reports. They were very good reports.
But they were issued first. They got leaked.
Yes,
because they weren't going to be issued. And then the unredacted version got leaked, which had everyone's names in. So everyone read that, and then Premier Rugby actually issued the redacted version, and everyone's already read the detail. Hence, we know Mauro Itoje was paid £900,000 for his image rights, for 30% of his image rights, which looks like an absolute bargain for Nigel Ray.
So after all that, it's a real test of their systems, because we may joke, but I do think the salary cap is the single most important thing in Premiership rugby, and enforcing that salary cap is absolutely vital. And if Leicester are guilty, there should be punishments, and the punishments should be disproportionate to the crime, because that's how punishments work.
And it's going to be very, very tough for Leicester fans, but I'm sure the honourable and fair ones among them will want exactly the same levies against them proportionately than they were asking for Saracens. Now, if you actually remember, we were not coming down on Saracens
particularly hard, no.
in the level that many other people were. And so, equally, we could sit here and go, well, let's just see what it is first, and maybe let's just... There's a lot of other things, there's a lot of other moving parts, and we can let it go. And that would be consistent for us.
Yes, it would be.
If there were Leicester fans chomping at the bit and taking... gleefully waving Saracens goodbye, they need to have a look in the mirror if they don't then accept the same kind of rationale for themselves.
Do you know, if Leicester Tigers are found guilty, I'll be heartbroken. I'll be heartbroken for Leicester Tigers and this team have worked so hard. Also, their fans are returning. But
yeah,
the sport in general.
Oh, 100%. My prediction is it will just be a fine.
I have a feeling you're right, and I do think that would be in line with the Saracens thing, providing you can prove it wasn't... I mean, you know, they didn't win any European titles. Not that that's the point. But if it's a marginal... When I say marginal, less than 200k, and they come clean, and they open their books, they'll get away with a points deduction and a fine.
Yeah, well, there is, because Wasps accidentally breached it a couple of years ago.
With VAT.
Yeah, but it was to the tune of about 50 grand.
Yeah, that was an agent VAT thing.
And there is, I can't remember the detail, but there is a staggered penalty.
Yeah.
So something like below, let's just say, below 50 grand is...
10%.
Yeah, or 50p on the pound.
Yes, that's right.
Between 50 grand and 200 grand is £1 on the pound.
Yeah.
And over 200 grand or over 250 grand is, I think it was £3 on the pound, because that's where Saracens, their 5 million...
Yes, you're right. Something
fine
like that.
Stings, doesn't came it? In. It would really sting. Yeah.
It also is another great example. I tell you who talks about this all the time is Mark Evans. The Premiership need a much more robust central resource, an independent governor or commissioner, some might call him, who actually has this power to, you know, mete out punishment. Because at the moment, it's got to go to basically the Premiership owners. The Premiership clubs have got to vote on it. I don't think that's good enough.
Marking their own homework.
Yeah,
which
they
is what
to,
we
they
saw.
Need to put their faith in someone who they believe in to do the right thing at the right time.
But as part of the Miners report, I'm pretty sure it was, getting my salary cap reports confused, but I'm sure it's the Miners report into the salary cap as a whole. One of the recommendations was basically you had a salary cap manager by the league, creating the role of salary cap director, who had far greater powers to act under his own authority and not have to go to the 13 boards for sign off from the clubs when they are, exactly as you say, marking their own homework.
So I would make two, and I've said this before, so I'll keep it brief, two changes. One would be the salary cap director, which I'd call a commissioner. I think you mentioned Lord Miners would be your nominee for...
In the past, he was good. I'd probably go for Lord Dyson, actually.
Lord Dyson, one of the lords.
His that report, the Dyson report, the Miners report, I quite enjoyed, but I disagreed with it in parts. The Dyson report, I thought, was brilliant. And to go through 100 pages of, well, legal writing and condense it and make it as readable as he did, which in the same way as the recent Razzie Erasmus report, the 80-odd pages of the Razzie Erasmus report that was so accessible and easy to read, when you could see that there is tombs and tombs of information and intelligent thought and debate that's gone into what is 80 pages, but a very accessible 80 pages.
Yeah.
It's incredibly impressive skill, that.
Completely agree with that, but our minds work very differently, because whereas you go with Dyson, I think I might go with someone like The Rock. I don't know yet. I
mean, he's Samoan. He used to play rugby when he was younger.
I mean, I don't think people would lie to him. Looks good in a suit. I just think he'd be a
looks
great...
impeccable in a suit.
Yeah. And the other thing that I would do as well, and I love this idea, which is the players have to do an internal salary return to the league. And if they want to outsource it to an agent, they can do that, and the agent signs it off. And as long as you are honest with everything that you've received from the club, no matter what you've received, even if it's 15 million quid, right? You write 15 million quid on that return, hand it into the league, and if those returns don't match up with the salary cap, which the club have said, there then is an instant investigation. If you've been caught covering something up as a player, you can get banned. And if the club is covering something up, they get banned. But as long as you are honest as the player, or your agent is honest as the agent, and that's a great in for agents, you know. Agents can now find themselves with actually something to do. Because currently, where do they send their players? There's only 13 employers that they can possibly have. There's a pretty tight salary cap. They need a reason to prove their worth. This could be the perfect reason to prove their worth. Knowledge around the salary cap.
I'm sure that was one of the points in the miners' report, to get it. You're effectively getting it verified two ways.
Yes.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it, just because you're putting onus on the players to do something.
Well, it's a little bit like if you work for the security services or high up in one of the banks, which is you have to come clean with your financials because you could be corrupted. So you have to come clean with your financials, and if you're found out to be lying, then there's some very serious penalties, including the loss of your job. Now, with rugby, it is financial doping. And so the players, in the same way that they have to submit their medical... I mean, I would be far, far more touchy about people taking my blood than I would about people looking at my bank statements. I'd be far more touchy about people looking at my internet history than I would be taking my blood or my financial statements.
Yes, quite.
Yeah.
We should get a VPN sponsor to...
VPN.
At this point.
Hit us up.
We'll watch this space with that one. It's playing out. Leicester have said they are assisting the current...
Which, given that the current CEO and Borthwick have both... They're only 18 months in post.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a good thing for Leicester that they've cleaned house before this has happened.
And just another one, just the last thing on this. A bit on Twitter today. About, is this the reason so many players left? Is this the reason so many executives left? And the answer is no. The reason that so many people left is because heads had to roll post Matt O'Connor. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And years of poor performance. And we've said it before, they avoided relegation by the skin of their teeth twice.
Yeah.
It was only because of Saracens and then no relegation last season.
One question on this, do we know how it came to light? Because previously it was some... journalistic investigation. How was this one?
It was first reported in the Times.
Alex Lowe has been all over this, I think.
But yeah, I don't know. It could well be people scouring the company's house.
Isn't it? You hear about it all the time. Like, I knew Leicester Tigers used image rights. I've always known that. And they've been more aggressive on it than other teams. And I've always known that because I'm interested in these sort of things. But never legal.
When you say more than other teams, that means is a suggestion there that eventually there'll be other teams that get some teams
don't do it. There is HMRC guidance as to how much you can put in, and then after that, it's, you know, at your own risk. You have to prove if these companies are viable or if they meet HMRC guidelines.
And you'd have to prove that if you're paying £100,000 for someone's image right and a salary of £120,000, you've got to prove that image rights are five times the value of their playing worth.
Exactly.
Which would be unusual.
It would be very unusual. But without doubt, the player's value to a club is far more. Well, not far more, but it is more than just the player.
Certain.
Yeah.
Like your third choice back row, third choice number six, his image rights will be negligible. Your starting fly half.
A lot.
If you've got Maro Itoji, a huge amount.
Imagine.
So we'll watch this space. There'll be plenty of time to talk about it. I'll be very interested to see what years this covers and what potential alternative parallel universes might have happened had it surfaced sooner, assuming there is guilt or knowledge of wrongdoing and it to any significant degree. But we'll definitely watch this space. What other stories are there bubbling around?
Well, there's a couple. You guys might find this incredibly boring, but there's a couple of little construction related stories.
This is quite a rare moment where your two great passions, construction and rugby, collide. So take the centre stage, Phil.
So two interesting construction related stories this week. One positive and one negative. The positive first: Bath have gone all the way to the Court of Appeal and overturn the 1922 covenants, which is very good news if you are a Bath fan, Bath player, Bath owner, anyone to do with Bath. Because the 1922 covenant basically limited what they could do on the wreck. Mm. And it stated, it was put in place, unsurprisingly, nearly 100 years ago, in 1922. And it stated that nothing could be erected on the wreck, erected, placed, built or done on the land, which may be or grow to be a nuisance, annoyance or disturbance or otherwise prejudicially affect the adjoining premises or the neighbourhood. So all of the adjoining properties and the neighbourhood were contesting Bath, or certain members.
A couple of people were who had flats back or houses backing onto the wreck.
Yeah, I would contest if I had a view of the rugby pitch and then I didn't have a view of the rugby
potential.
Pitch,
yeah,
absolutely.
I would play hell.
Yeah. Absolutely.
NIMBY.
Yeah,
you're a NIMBY.
Well, no, the opposite, in my backyard, but I want to see it.
Yeah.
So that is very good news for Bath. They can go forward with, well, huge upgrade.
They can turn it round 90 degrees and make it larger.
Is that the idea, is it?
Yeah.
Putting more stands and probably a lot more hospitality and much, much better right. facilities, because the wreck is an incredible location.
It really is.
But it's not very good facilities.
Imagine if you turned it around 90 degrees and you had your hospitality on the river side.
Oh, I see.
Where the wooden chair stands are, and you can have windows out the back over the river and the city of Bath, the weir.
The cathedral.
And then the other side, you've got
the hills and the
you've got the pitch with the hills in the background.
Yeah,
I've never even thought of that. It's incredible. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a few more questions I have for you. Now, obviously, modern architecture is garbage now.
Yeah.
And nothing nice has been built for the best part of 100 years.
I genuinely wonder whether there's an element of demoralisation in some of the construction. I mean, I don't know, you've got a construction thought.
Communist architects.
Yeah, there are some things that I do go, are they trying to make me feel bad about my country and my culture by erecting horrible, horrible buildings?
100%.
I don't think it's as conscious as that. I think you'll often get grand architectural ambition and ambitions of all sorts of futuristic technology, sensible, efficient technology that has long-term benefits for the building and everything else, and then it will cost a lot more to have those grand architectural ambitions and all the technology, and so it just all gets scaled back.
So here's some steel beams and some glass.
Yeah, pretty. It's often, from my experience, it's often kind of lowest common denominator by committee. You end up at the lowest common denominator because that is the cheapest route to get the building built.
Is there any way you could have efficient, future-proof, technological and construction in a Georgian style?
Oh, yeah, you definitely could.
Well, that's what they should do.
It would be very, if you're going to build it of the Bath stone,
yes,
it'd be phenomenally expensive.
Well, do it.
But you can clad it with something that's, if you look at St. Peter's Square, and we built 2 St. Peter's Square in Manchester, which has a stone effect cladding that on one elevation, on the south elevation, is shaped into some of the historic shapes of the city. That is quite nice, tastefully done stone effect cladding that you could do something similar to that without enormous expense.
Right. That's what you need to do.
That matches the tone of the kind of the palette of the city and the history of the city without huge expense.
Okay, so why would Bath want to expand their stadium? Because they want more revenue. They want more people in, more revenue.
It was full again the other day. Okay. Well, Boxing Day, it was full.
Right, and this is my bugbear with Bath. My absolute bugbear. I've got this incredible scheme. And what you can do...
I know what you're going to say.
What you can do is keep your overheads exactly the same. Yet you can raise your revenue by doubling the cost of tickets. Right? And keep on going up until you're 95% full. And then that's when you'll know you've hit that beautiful sweet spot. So you've got a little bit of surge. You know, if you want to go for... You know, if there is a big game, you can fill up that 5%. But just milk them for everything they're worth, because they're all rich. I mean, it's probably the wealthiest town.
Oh, my word.
Yeah,
walking to the wreck down Pulteney Street and sit the number of mustard chinos and... not even exaggerating... I saw about half a dozen fur coats on people walking around.
In fact, go the other way. Reduce the capacity of the stadium, right? But make it a bit more of a luxury experience. Build in scarcity. Make people worried every match day that they might miss out.
Reclining seats with like meeting around you, personal service.
Rescind all the season tickets. Do you know, like the best restaurants don't do bookings? You've just got to show up on the day and hope for the best. That's what I would do, and sell it triple the price. It'd be far easier.
Well, the problem is, to do that, you've got to be playing some good rugby. And Leicester found that when they were really performing badly, and Leicester have always been incredibly well attended,
their
attendances were dropping significantly. And now they're obviously picking back up. But you can't raise the prices when you are putting on displays that Bath have been putting on recently.
People rightly give Bruce Craig a bit of an earful. Like, do the right thing, Bruce, disappear. And you can't knock his commitment. He's taking this all the way to the Court of Appeal. The man puts his money where his mouth is. Now, he's not winning many games, but I do respect the amount of money he pumps into that club.
Just sort of tying in the Bath thing and looping back on what we were talking about before regarding Leicester, no one seems to be mentioning Ed Griffiths's checkered past. In him as the starting in January, the new chairman at Bath.
That, isn't it? Because, I mean, Ed Griffiths was brought back into Saracens to sort it out. Now, things going wrong in Ed Griffiths' first time around? I don't know is the answer.
Well, but it woefully failed when he got brought back in, because he came in to try and get them under the salary cap that season before they opened their books, and then didn't open their books.
Sorry, I shouldn't have taken that.
And then he obviously failed and then disappeared again.
Just on the Ed Griffiths thing, I do think he's a very deep thinker when it comes to sports. I've even had the pleasure of speaking to his brother. Mm-hmm.
Didn't he have a slight checkered history at Worcester as well?
Was he at Worcester?
I believe so, yeah. Mm. Well, things didn't go too well there either.
Interesting.
No, that was interesting. So, I agree with you.
So his brother ran all of NFL outside of the US, which is a fairly large job. Mm. So they've obviously, as a family, they seem to have a bit of a mind for sport. That said, the jobs he's been handed, like, can you get Saracens underneath the salary cap? Well, open up the books, get rid of some expensive players, and we'll do it. That's not the hardest job in the world.
Well, it was, because you try to do it mid-season. So you've got to pay them to break their contracts.
But when he found out that it couldn't be done, he just said, I'm going.
Yeah.
So if it's the easiest thing in the world, he would have done it. And if not,
it was left. Yeah, it was not an easy thing to do.
Anyway,
to draw the parallel, with Bath, also the easiest job in the world. Oh, you need a defence coach. All these guys have got to go and get in Johan van Graan. I mean, I don't know. I think I could. Could you have come up with that, Tim?
Well, it's quite.
I might have come in and in a review of the club said, do you know what? I think we need a defence coach.
Who runs the defence around here? Everyone just looks at each other. Anyone? Yeah.
And you could also say, we need a role for me. Oh, no, a big. My review includes a long-term, highly lucrative role for.
A chairman. Perfect.
But I tell you what, before we go on to your second construction board, let's just briefly touch on Bath then, as we're there.
Yes.
Because as you say,
You were at the Rec, right?
I was at the Rec. Great. Full house. Bath started quite well.
Yeah.
And then, predictably, the wheels fell off.
So I didn't see the game, but I did hear that when Sam Underhill went off, they looked different.
No, you don't. I would not put it down to Sam Underhill. There's no question, he's a big loss, and I think they're lacking on leadership on the field, but they were also missing other players, Underhill aside. However, whoever is on the field, to be as passive as Bath were, there's something in the top 2 inches that's not right.
Do you think they'll give it up?
It's not technical. I mean, there are clearly technical issues. And when I said to Stuart Hooper, is it attitude or is it technical? Because he acknowledged that they made life far too easy for Gloucester. Mm. I said, well, is that just attitude then? And he said, no, it's technical. We were down to 13 men. I do think it's a bit of the top 2 inches. It looked like a Premiership team against a League One team. In the rolling malls,
well, the time
and again, and Gloucester are very good at that.
They are very good at rolling malls.
However, there was just missed tackles, standing off rucks and mauls when they're trundling over your line, running when they're running a rolling mall over your line.
Yeah, the speed of the rolling mall. But the tries came, and I've not watched the full game as you will have done, Tim. But the tries came from, it seemed, two things: rolling mall, where Gloucester have been incredibly successful with them and well organised, and Bath were just in total disarray by comparison. And then the both Chris Harris tries, and I think the Kyle Moyle try, was just a bouncing ball in midfield.
Yep.
Gloucester react. Bath just stood around. No one concentrating, no one reacting. And Gloucester exploit Bath's mental fragility.
That's
lack of focus, lack of awareness.
I mean, obviously Bath are rubbish to start with. But is it like you're rubbish with the perfect storm now, which is new coach coming in, don't really need to impress the old guy because we don't even know if he's going to be there. Poor old Hatley, is he staying? Is he going? Is he just... Does anyone listen to what he says now? Is there any point in listening to what he's saying? Does anyone listen to Stuart Hooper? I mean...
But what is Stuart Hooper doing?
Yeah.
He seemed to be able to create a position in what will be the new world where he is doing the same thing as he's currently doing, which is nothing by the looks of things.
It's a really... I mean, that must be a really toxic environment because who are you there to impress? And you've also got the shame of having no wins. And I bet everyone's blaming it on each other now because you can't have that much talent in the squad and not be blaming it on someone. You just can't. You can't. At the start of the season, I spoke to a few of their players and they were very much like, we are working really hard. We don't know what it is. We're trying really hard. It's just not coming off. I don't think you can be this deep into the season and say the same things.
Well, that was a record defeat to Gloucester.
Which is incredible, isn't it? Mm. I mean, is it one of many record defeats at the past?
Yes.
They are breaking records this season.
Yes, they are. The unbelievables.
So to finish that, Bruce, Ed, Tarquin, if you need a director of construction, give me a call.
Yes.
You could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite fancy that.
You could probably do a bit of defence, assistant defence coach at the same time.
I can't be any worse.
While I'm here, guys, director, let me take my hard hat off and put my boots on.
defence coach.
Yeah, why not? As for Gloucester, again, I just have to doff my cap and acknowledge how wrong I was at the start of the season, putting them at, 10th or 11th?
I think I put them lower than that, yeah. And totally wrong. Skivington has done a great job. He's done it on solid foundations. And what's amazing is the solid foundations then allow the guys like Chris Harris and Thorley and Lewis Rees-Sammet, his little nudge inside, so delicate. But it allows those guys to do what they can do.
Well, that's what's impressive about Gloucester is they're where they are. They're in the top four and they're in the top four not really showing everything that they've got because three quarters of their tries have come from line-out.
Yeah.
So when the pitch is firm up and when they really get the attacking game developing, and I think...
And
like,
when Hastings beds in a bit
when
more.
When Hastings beds in, exactly. And Lloyd Evans, who's been shifted to fullback, he's been brilliant. So they've got two fantastic tens. Yeah, you know, where they were with Sippers, an issue Bath have now got on their hands and on their books.
There's something really special about this Gloucester team. You said that this is a record defeat of Bath. This is, you wouldn't say the best will in the world, this is the best version of Gloucester. You know, they've had some cracking teams over the year. So for those boys to do this tells you that they are very well organised. They all believe in each other. They're doing the right things. I keep repeating this stats, but last year they had more losing bonus points than anyone, which means they were in a lot of games, either 3-point losses or seven point losses, and they had an awful lot of them. I love how Skivington has come in and added value. And I think there's far too many coaches who were basically freeloading, talking about all sorts of other things which were not rugby-related. For instance, you know, the whole Gustard way of doing things. And actually not adding to the rugby. Skivington's got a view of rugby. And fair play to Gloucester for having faith in the London Irish Lionel coach and making him the head man.
Yeah, well, there's a few things I really like. They've moved their training facilities right by the club. And
there was 4G pitch, so they can use that.
Just over the road from the ground, and what I like about that is there was always an element when you go to Gloucester's training ground at Hartbury. There was almost an element you were visiting Hartbury, not Gloucester. It's like they're back in the town. Yeah. They open up some of their training sessions once a month for fans just to come in and watch. They've really built that relationship. I know pre-season it's a bit of a culture thing, which I think you'll even like this one. George Skivington has been getting his players to do presentations on various bits about the history of the club. To the other players.
Okay, not the worst.
Which I think is quite nice.
I mean, it's not every week, is it?
No, it's not every week. And there's clearly a bit of a relationship building between the fans and the club. They're back in the town. They're opening up the doors for training. And George Skivington was not Gloucester man, but that's something he's really brought in. Also, well, I think what's really impressive now, you're starting to see the defence come through, which was a bit,
under Don Waldock.
Under Don Waldock.
Don Waldock.
Yeah. And I think the most exciting bit, if I was a Gloucester fan, would be that it almost looks like whoever they pick, even the young guys that you might not have known about a year or two ago, you've got total confidence in them coming in and keeping a certain standard.
And I think that is a lot to do with preparing your young guys to play senior rugby. You know, there's a lot to be said for that. Make sure they know the base things like the calls, but make sure that they're acclimatised, make sure that they're comfortable in first-team surroundings. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Bath could learn a lot from Gloucester, I think, because Johan van Graan's coming in, that's great. It feels a little bit like Todd Blackadder all over again, doesn't it, in a way? You know, but anyway, we can't judge him until he's arrived. It would have been nice for him to have done, for Bath to have done something like Wasps. Like Lee Blackett's another one I've got a tremendous amount of respect for. Not come from nothing as such, but he was just the Wasps attack coach. There must be loads of guys like Skivington and Blackett who just need an opportunity and will do a really good job.
Yeah. Yeah, intelligent, forward-thinking coaches who do things the right way.
It can go really well. It can go poorly. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Just before we do that, can anyone think of an appointment like that that's gone really poorly?
Paul Gustard?
Yeah, Paul Gustard.
Well, Gustard was a bit different because he was obviously Saracens, then he was England for a period.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So it's not like he was plucked from relative obscurity.
I mean, there's hardly anyone I can think of who's come through the route of, say, Blackett, which is Championship, and then attack coach.
Hmm.
I mean, everyone seems fairly well, because the league's quite small. There's very limited opportunities to do this job. People usually go for a proven commodity. I'd be interested to see. I mean, in the NFL, there's a lot more coordinators that get head coach jobs very, very quick. It seems in rugby, they seem just to recycle the same names and they poach from other leagues, particularly in the Premiership, because there's a lot more money. But I'd like to see them appoint more Blacketts and Skivingtons.
Well, maybe with the relative successes of Blackett and Skivington, we will see a bit more.
Yeah.
Tell us some other names we might have missed. I'm just thinking, I can't think of anyone besides Blackett, and there must be names who came through that Championship route. That almost never happens.
It doesn't, does it? And it's,
I mean,
a shame.
Ian Costello is a coach, not a director of rugby or a head coach.
And he's at Munster now.
Yeah.
Is he head coach at Munster now?
Baxter obviously was Championship.
He's in charge of their academy.
Baxter's a very different route again.
Yeah.
Declan Kidney's been a coach for the longest time.
Yeah,
biggest
forever.
CV.
Dean Richards coach forever.
Thing. Yeah.
Jonathan Thomas, there's one for you.
Yeah. Although, I guess he did coach with Worcester in the Championship, didn't he?
No, he coached with Bristol.
Did he?
Maybe he was at Worcester.
He might have done both.
He's a player for Worcester. He's a coach at Bristol.
Anyway, let us know. There'll be some we've forgotten. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Contact tedchases@gmail.com. Construction Corner Part 2, Phil.
I'll only mention this relatively briefly, but Kingspan Stadium, or Kingspan as principal sponsor of Ulster, including the Kingspan Stadium.
One of my favourite stadiums in all of rugby.
Great stadium to go to. I actually got one of my Christmas presents was a painting picture of the Kingspan Stadium.
Oh, fantastic.
Wonderful.
Lovely, appropriate present. Mm. Delighted with it.
Did it have dark skies, dark, moody skies?
It didn't actually. It did have it was like a summer evening with an ambery hint to the sky.
Lovely
picture.
So what's happened with Kingspan then?
Well,
Kingspan, Riefenhall from Hull.
Michael Gove, in his role as UK Secretary of State for Levelling Up Housing and Communities,
okay,
has written to Ulster.
Hang on, is this to give him a grant to increase the stadium? As
he said, what can I do to help Belfast? You're doing such a good job there for the community, Ulster Rugby, in a...
Yeah, that sounds like a very Machiavellian thing.
Yeah, so what can we do to help?
Success?
What can we do to help?
He has written to them to ask them to reconsider their sponsorship. They reconsider accepting millions of pounds from Kingspan as a consequence of Kingspan's role in the Grenfell fire. There are lots of things at play here, but two things. And I won't go into the detail of Kingspan, but Kingspan were not Lily White in Grenfell. It was not their product that caused the majority of the harm, but it allowed them to uncover some really horrible behaviours within Kingspan that have been addressed within that, that company. That's one thing on one side. There's
so it did not cause and would not have prevented what happened happening.
Yes, they did okay. historically lie. They falsified or lied about its fire test certificates for one of the products that was used, one of the Kingspan products that was used, albeit that was used in very small quantities, less than 5%, without Kingspan's recommendation.
Okay. Obviously and awful was, and malpractice.
Horrendous, yeah. Could have had far worse consequences. It could have had terrible consequences. Yeah. It's fortunate that it didn't, from a Kingspan perspective.
From a Kingspan perspective, obviously, yeah.
And from everyone's perspective. Yeah. But that has kind of been dealt with by Kingspan. Heads did roll, rightly so, as a consequence of this. But now for Michael Gove to kind of the overreach to step in and say...
Government overreach? I don't believe it.
Remarkable overreach.
A remarkable overreach to step in to Ulster, who are the long-term benefactor of the Kingspan sponsorship that has will have had countless good for the community of Northern Ireland, for Ulster, for Belfast.
Whatsoever. Like it's sort of like a man who doesn't understand council culture. It would make a lot more sense if Michael Gove wrote to Kingspan, say, don't sponsor Ulster, right? Rather than writing to Ulster, say, don't accept their money.
Yeah, but,
it's the wrong way round.
Also saying, I feel so strongly about you having your name on a stadium that we are going to use the government funds to subsidise, and we want you to go away and never be seen again. That would be it.
You carry the water for us, please, because you know, the punitive measures that we want to take, we're either not brave enough or we won't pass legislation.
But actually, what they're saying here is, Ulster, bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah, yeah, to turn down the millions of pounds that you've been given over a long period of time going forward.
Now, my point would be, companies are amoral. They're not good, they're not bad. The people who work inside the companies...
Except pharmaceutical companies.
They are very... You're absolutely right, Tim. Sorry, I overstepped the mark. they're amoral. People inside the companies, they need to be held responsible for the actions that they do. What's the end game for Michael Gove here? Does he never want Kingspan to sponsor another sports team ever again? Does he want them to put no more money into the community game?
Does he care if Ulster can't keep the lights on?
That's a good... Like, if the money from Kingspan is going to do genuine good for Ulster and the local communities, surely that is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, if Kingspan came up with a package of, you know, compensation for, you know, all the things that they've done wrong, if they've proven to have done anything wrong, presumably a large part of this would be community engagement and, you know, money to charities and community projects. I mean, that's like the most well-trodden path ever. And so does this now mean that other companies are not allowed to sponsor sports teams who've done... I mean, it's just such a stupid manoeuvre by him.
It seems crazy. I can't work it out.
Yeah, it's just politics, but politics which have not been particularly well considered.
That's what it seems. There probably is a bigger thing at play that I just have no awareness of. I can't even comprehend, but... I'd be fascinated to hear what that is, because it makes no sense from the seat that I'm sitting in.
Because unless he's going to write, hey, don't accept money for 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, does he want Kingspan just gone? Because in the scheme of things, Kingspan is actually a very important company to Ulster, the products that they make, the people that they employ. You know, you've got to be very careful before... you can throw the people and the executives underneath the bus, but Kingspan is much more than that.
And what exactly as you said, that there are lots of shady practices in lots of businesses where... Where would that end if you started?
Yeah,
Michael Gove. Every sponsorship deal has to go across Michael Gove's desk to decide whether he thinks they're.
And again, it's the wrong way around. You'd understand if you wrote to Kingspan in height of the Paddy Jackson trial, which he didn't, by the way, and say, you know, don't accept any money. Now,
are you sure you want your name associated with that?
He's got council culture the wrong way around.
Crazy, but what can you do?
So if there's no community coaches and outreach in the future in the outside parts of Belfast, that might be the reason. But we'll see. Yes. Anyway, like you say, Phil, there might be things we're not aware of. Moving parts that aren't at play. But government overreach shocker is what it looks like at the moment.
A very similar story happened with Mercedes, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And Mercedes actually... or turned down. They stopped. They ceased their long-term relationship with Kingspan.
Which is easy, isn't it, when you're Mercedes?
Mercedes.
And Toto Wolff is your director, or your sporting director, or whatever it is, and Ineos is all over your car.
Yeah.
You know, when Jim Ratcliffe is writing your checks, by all means, turn people away.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the same, is it, when you're a rugby club?
Yeah, a rugby club in Ulster who the game this week, which would have gone ahead with fans, therefore would have been significantly revenue generating around Christmas time, and didn't go ahead as a consequence of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is sad to see.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah.
But hey, there were games of fans.
And let's talk about the Harlequins one, because that was absolutely epic.
And 70,000 people, or 72,000 tickets issued.
Issued.
I'm not quite sure there was that many people there, not quite that, but the atmosphere looked bouncing.
Yeah.
Well, they're two good teams to watch.
I mean, and...
Yeah.
Wales had DJ Spoonie, Harlequins have got Pete Tong.
Christ, is he still around?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's... I did see something saying that he's basically the same age as Chris Boyd. And they look aging slightly differently.
Fair play to Quinns on a brilliant event.
Yeah, can you imagine Pete Tong answering who wants to make Harlequin?
Well, like Tim Westwood when he used to be on Radio 1 on a Friday night. He was in his 60s, I think. He's going. I can't remember what his catchphrases were.
Westwood.
What's up, dogs?
It was always and it was always he had like broken glass sound effects.
Oh yeah,
and the horn,
shooting like pistols going off,
pistols and sirens.
Yeah, air horn.
My old housemate in university is a rather wealthy chap, and he had a flat on the back of Oxford Road. Hang on, Oxford Street.
Oxford Street in London.
Yeah,
nice.
And on the same floor as him was Tim Westwood's flat.
Nice.
I said, well, what's he like? I said, I don't know, I only ever talked to him about the bins. that's as close as I ever got to Tim Westwood.
Yo, we're going in, baby. Now drop the bomb.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, he got into a shooting in a bloody petrol station. A man died.
He's the son of a bishop.
No.
Yeah, I did know that.
Bishop Westwood.
Yeah.
Sounds like a delicious cheese.
Get your hustle on, baby. Yeah, we're built for that.
You must have got Tim, the circles that you hang around.
You've never met, him.
Have you not?
No, never met him. Westwood. No.
So it was Pete Tong kicked things off. Yeah. Then it was Harlequins women who had a very good win, and then the main event.
We're going to differ on this, JB. That kit, in fact, both kits.
Oh, thank God! I thought you were going to say something else. Yes, talk about the kits. That's far better.
Both kits are an abomination.
I love them. I absolutely love them. I love olive. I love olive green, and I love racing orange. Love it. Do you know what? I like the Ospreys version of it too.
Is this just you being contrary?
No, I love that kit.
I would like it. So I would like it if it was some training gear.
Yeah, I look for some training gear,
tactical gear, or something. Some training gear in those colours, I think, would be great. The fact that it's a match shirt for Harlequins, and they're playing big game 13.
Yeah,
they're playing big game 13 at the home of English rugby in that kit. It strikes the wrong chord.
It's awful.
Do you know what it reminds me of? Have you ever seen American Hunters and they wear like camouflage
with the orange?
I mean, I don't see what the point is with the orange.
Yeah, if that was in Kevlar material, I'm all for it.
Exactly,
it's all futuristic and militarist. I love it.
Yeah, but that has got a time and place, and it's when you're doing muscle ups or your duck hunting or whatever. Those things, fine. In Twickenham, Quins playing Big Game 13 against Northampton. The Saints of Northampton against the Quins of the Stoop of
and they have Twickenham. I mean, they have the most one of the most iconic rugby shirts on earth. And let's not forget, it was only a few years ago we lauded their centenary 150 year anniversary kit as the one of the greatest rugby kits ever produced.
Yeah, that's true. Look, I'm not saying it's better than the quarters. I'm just saying I like it.
Yeah, different circumstances, I could definitely get on board with it.
And this is a direct appeal to Quins. Can you make a workout vest in that style?
Now you're talking, yeah.
There you go. I'd be
all over that.
And it only overshadowed how bad that Northampton white jersey is as well.
Yes.
Because that is awful. I don't want to let Northampton get off the hook with that.
Mm.
Both teams produced a great game. Both produced terrible kits. Do better.
And you say both teams produced a great game. Northampton started brilliantly. Three tries in 15 minutes.
21-7.
They scored 3 points for the rest of the game, or 6 points for the whole of the rest of the game.
Chris Boyd's comment after the game was, we need to stop being victims.
Yeah, I can see that.
I kind of see what he means. That's a very punchy, honest thought, I felt.
Yeah, he's got a job on his hands, because I think this is the best version of the team that he has. I don't think they get any better than this. I think they're competent. They play, broadly speaking, like I think you'd hope that they play. They're just not good enough. I think he needs to rebuild and replace a lot of players.
So where would you replace? Because the tight five is where it's at for me.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of guys I like. I like Ribbons. I like Matavesi. I've always quite liked Waller. But the combination, the performances, just...
I think basically four new props would be nice. Get rid of the existing ones. You need another second row, because as much as I like... say his name for me.
Api Ratuni
Urawa.
Urawa. It's really hard to say that. Api Ratuni
Urawa.
Rawa.
Yes. I like him. I do like him. He's getting on a bit now, I think. What's he? He must be 30-something.
Yeah, he's in his 30s.
I just think that they need someone bigger, better, badder. I like Moon. I like Moon, though. So
Moon and Coles are both okay, but Ribbons is...
Ribbons is legitimate.
Yeah, Ribbons is the top
he's
lock.
He's an enforcer, number four.
I think they need to make a decision on... I like Ludlam.
I think it's Ludlam, four props.
Ludlam. I love Ludlam. But I also love Harrison. Don't like them together. You can have 1 6-foot crazy. Well,
it was
man.
All. It was Laws, Ludlam, Augustus. Yes,
yeah. And time. Wood came on for the last 20.
Yes, but when everyone's fit, they tend to have those two together. And in my mind, Northampton like to go out with Laws, Harrison, Ludlam. Now, I know they've got Augustus and whatnot.
Yeah, I think Augustus now, because he is a bigger lump.
Yeah.
I think they will use him more and more as that go to eight.
Yeah,
and he's got two tries.
I just think they need. So I mean, you can't replace Courtney Laws. You just can't. So
yeah,
you
can't.
He's there. Even so, I think they need another big-bodied guy in
a big-bodied six
in the back. Yeah, because in the back row.
If you replace Laws, you've got Wood, who's getting on a bit now, but he has played six, seven, and eight for England. Very good leader, good captain, very experienced guy. But he is at the end of his career.
I think it is props and a mindset change. Like Chris Boyd, fair play to him. He's stuck to his guns on this all the time. He maintains the scrum is just an opportunity to restart. It's not an opportunity to be an attacking weapon. That's not really how the Premiership works.
Well, I will say this. When I interviewed him, he said to me that in the Hurricanes, the thing which he would never compromise on is skills under pressure. Every single session, skills under pressure. I've got no reason to believe he doesn't still do that. He also said, when you're in the Northern Hemisphere, you have to understand you need a world-class set piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's at a bit of a crossroads now. How does he, what is it you leave out? Because you can't do everything. And I wonder if he's left out a little bit too much of the scrimmage, too much of the line out, and he needs to go back. And
Nairo's not playing, and he gave him a massive amount of identity, and his sheer presence, much like Nandolo for Leicester, creates opportunities for other people. Just convert him to a prop.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Well, the prop, you're right, he is at a crossroads because he's put his faith in two relatively young English props in Aaron Painter and Paul Hill.
Yeah.
And they've not yet found... They've not fulfilled their potential yet. Does he stick with them and hope that they do in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years? Or does he spend big money, which is what obviously they tried to do with Owen Franks, which was unsuccessful that time around.
Oh, just say on this with Hill, he must be at Saints now for what, 4 years? And they're still waiting for him to be the I thought he was going to be England's tight head. I really did.
Yeah.
And I think in the loose, he's probably up there with the best tight heads. Probably not the best, but you know, top three in the loose, I'd say. But that's just not enough. It's not enough.
He's been there 6 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I remember him coming from Leeds.
Great.
This guy's the future. Just not there.
Yeah.
As for Quins, fair play. They did Quins things, and that Kerr Donbrandt axis is just deadly.
And what was amazing was obviously Marcus Smith drops out.
Yeah.
And Edwards comes in and looked great.
Looks a bit like Marcus Smith.
Which I guess it shows that when you've got Donbrandt, Kerr inside you and Esterhazen outside you.
Yes.
You've got guys that are doing everything. And when you've got in the back three, like Caden Murley took his tries brilliantly. Louis Leiner took his try brilliantly. Tyrone Green has been just so good. Marching at 13 is such a good back line that everyone knows their place. They all play well together. So Edwards just slotted in and can do the simple things that look brilliant when all the guys around him are ticking.
Some awesome
tries.
I think
I would be a pretty nifty 10. With Kerr and Esterhazen around me. Yeah. I think I'd look pretty good here.
You look great in that kit as well.
Oh, imagine.
Imagine how good you'd look.
Oof. Some fantastic tries. Hat trick for Donbrandt, who just his reading of the game. That one where it was the driving maul, Kerr went in to grab it. I think it was the one that put them in the lead. And Kerr just gives the pass.
Yeah.
Barely without looking. Donbrandt had already anticipated.
Yeah, the timing.
The anticipation and the timing. Most players would have waited for Kerr to have plucked the ball out the back of the mall before they start running. Donbrandt's already read.
You just know
a couple of moves ahead about what's going to happen, and he's there.
Yes.
You just know when you play with certain players what they're going to do. Yeah. And you know, you'll have done this in your career, but you know, I used to play with this number 9. I won't mention his name. But I just knew if I ran a certain angle around the corner and called his name, he would know when to lift the ball. And you can just see those sort of little connections now that they've been together for so long. And that's what makes them so incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, but no other. I don't think any other player on the park would have had that same anticipation and reading of the game that Donbrandt had for that try.
I completely agree. When I watched it, I thought, exactly as you did, either someone would waited, or they would have piled into the maul to try and propel the maul forward, because you're only 5 yards from the line at that point. For Donbrandt to do neither of those two things and to see that the best option is, no, start running now because Kerr is going to retrieve and then the pop is on, was
the nearest
different level.
The nearest rib player I can think of Donbrandt in terms of how he plays, wait for it, and let me explain it, Mauro Itoje. Because Donbrandt reads attack like Mauro Itoje reads defence.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, you just see Mauro Itoje, oh yeah, I'll just go and get that ball. Well, why would you make that decision? Because I can go and get it and no one else sees it. They just make it look ridiculously easy and natural.
In a different way in attack, but Chris Ashton, when he was at his absolute
he's
peak,
inside support lines.
Yeah, the way he would basically know where the gap in the defence is and be running the line, the support line, way ahead of when anyone else would read it, and so he's always there on the shoulder. And this actually, in the same way that Antoine Dupont does it,
100%,
now,
yeah,
he's always. You know, you do it. You watch Antoine Dupont do it a few times, and you think, oh, maybe it's just coincidence. And then you watch it game after game, and he is there as the support, like running the support line for the break to finish off the try,
which you cannot defend because he is reacting to everything and all the parts that are moving minute detail and at a very fast pace. He's just reacting to what's evolving, and they're the special players. And
he's reacting before it's happened.
Before it's
happened,
that's
why he's in such a good position, because he knows what is going to happen.
It's like when you play chess. Like the good chess players can see the patterns and read where you might be in half a dozen moves. Time.
I'd love to see Harlequins going by Antoine Dupont, or Toulouse going by
Marcus Smith,
or Edwards.
Or Jonathan Beardmore.
Same. Oh, yeah. Oh, if they give me Esterhazen as well. You've got to deal.
Yeah, great game. Shame that Northampton fell off in the end. Quins
fell off after 15 minutes.
Yeah, I tell you what, the most egregious moment of that game was for Northampton. Was it the second or third Don Brandt try? Did he get two tries?
Three.
The third one then. It just picks it off the base. Yeah. Just runs
oh, yeah. That was cause, and that was the try. So until that point, obviously that finished the game, but Northampton were still getting a losing bonus point, and had, prior to that, they scored another try, they would have got, well, two losing bonus points definitely, but potentially a draw as well. And that makes the scoreline actually look worse than it was.
Yeah.
But it was so easy because he just picks up and flops over the line.
That was ridiculous. It was just ridiculous. I'll say it again.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. Bristol-Leicester.
Yeah.
Genge Bowl.
Good game this was. This was some game.
It was an entertaining game, this.
Because I guess both teams are bad. That's what I would say. Particularly the first half, it was...
What do you mean bad? As in, like, bad to the bone?
Yeah, so...
They're nasty. Is that what you mean?
No, not really.
I don't think anybody else in the... That would refer to Leicester as bad.
They were bad, yeah. So, this is the worst I think Leicester have played probably all season in terms of the actual game. They clearly want to beat teams by kicking the ball away, making the other team make the decision and losing the territorial battle, or turning them over and winning the penalty. I think
the way Saracens established their dominance.
Correct, yeah. That's clearly their game plan, and they're very, very good at it. So they couldn't really get their claws into the Bears quite as they'd hoped. And they found themselves in some really tricky situations. So they had two attempts in the Bears' 22 to convert into points. And actually, they ended up getting defended all the way back to the 10 metres twice. So there were some warning signs there. Not warning signs, but they couldn't impose the game that they wanted to on Bristol. Now, the problem you've got is when you play with some very tight margins and you're not slowly pulling away, you know, you're grinding these threes from the penalties and you get the odd rolling ball try, a mistake can cost you dear. And that's exactly what Bristol Bears did, is they forced a mistake, in fairness to them. They picked up the ball and they scored. I think they did that basically twice.
So for the Randall... Randall break to Lloyd.
Yeah.
Which was a trip by Maroney on Lloyd. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I didn't notice.
So
that.
When Randall makes the break, Randall bounces Nandolo, obviously.
Yep. Yeah, standard.
Offloads or passes out wide to Lloyd. Lloyd steps inside Maroney. Maroney trips... Ewan Lloyd. If Fitzharding doesn't score there, next phase,
yellow card time,
yellow card penalty try.
Yeah,
I think it probably would have been. So it actually would have been a better result for Bristol had they not have scored then. Mm. But yeah. Fortunately for Leicester, Bristol did score.
Yeah. So there was that try. I think the second try the Bears got was one of the most bizarre bits of officiating that I've seen. I mean, Leicester was so dominant in the scrum. They just smash over Bristol. Now, the laws say you must attempt a strike, and there was an attempted strike, but it wasn't a good strike. So Montoya lifts his leg, then puts it back up, and then drives away. It is a free kick. But Leicester, you see, plays to the whistle. They're celebrating. They think that they've won a penalty. I think they've won a penalty. Everyone thinks that they've won a penalty. But hats off to Bristol for being super aware, picking the ball and scoring. You can't argue. Yeah. You've got to do it.
And you see there the value of Randrandra. Because he beats two players,
yep.
Then sucks in two more, and then just offloads to... Yeah. So on that, there's four players on the floor as a consequence of Radradra.
He did do that, but he's also dropped the ball again. And I was watching him, and Pietau was the same. Pietau, in a lovely attacking position, just spills the ball forward. I mean, I think Radradra, I would sign him, but not for that price. I'd sign everyone in the Premiership.
Everyone's got a price.
Pietau's going to be leaving, and Randrandra will be the marquee player, so he won't be in the salary cap.
Is he not already the marquee player?
Yeah, he will be one of two, but next season they're only having one, and it will stay as Randrandra, and I think Pietau's going.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lot of money to be. I mean, he's still very, very good. There's no two ways about it.
Both of them are exquisite.
But they make mistakes. Oh,
that's just a rumor. That's the rumor that Pietau's mistakes. Going. Has that been confirmed or said?
Not Nick Dolly.
let's talk about the last 4 minutes, and again George Ford just doing George Ford things.
George Ford's here's the thing for you. I don't know if you agree or not, but George Ford, incredible. He's been incredible for a long time for Leicester. A few years ago we were saying that he's the only thing Leicester that is worth watching. I don't think it's enough. I think they need a second playmaker, and every time they had the ball in hand, except for that one time when they needed to, and Nick Dolly stood up and scored. Well, he didn't give the pass to score. I think Leicester need a second pair of hands, because if it's not in George Ford's hands, it's a mess. It's not a mess, it's just static. And then they make mistakes, and that's how Bristol got into the game. If they were a bit tidier going forward and had a little bit more of a settled approach, they probably would have shut Bristol out.
Who were Saracens' centres when they established their dominance again? It was Brad Barrett,
Marcelo Bosch.
So it's very much in the Saracens' mould, isn't
but
it?
But they had Goud at 15.
Goud at 15 as a playmaker. Yeah, you're right.
And do you know what they did with... and everyone does this now, so it's not like a big deal. But they used to use Barrett a lot at first receiver, just for that easy pass, just to burn a pair of hands. And then they've got Farrell doing things at second receiver. And also, Farrell did start a little bit at 12, because they had... Is Nils Mortimer... Is that the fly half, or is that flanker?
He was a fly half.
Fly half Nils Mortimer.
Yeah. Yeah, they had him, and they had someone else. Oh, and
Hodgson for...
And
for
Hodgson, too.
A period.
Yeah. Okay, well, interesting.
But you're all right. Hey. Fundamentally, they were not a creative team.
No.
But you know, they had two pairs of hands.
Well organised and very powerful.
Yeah.
I think it is a fair point that Leicester probably do at times miss that second pair of hands. I think maybe Freddie Stewart will get there, but he needs a bit more experience.
What I love about Leicester is what can you achieve with rugby, even if you don't have the greatest players? And that's what they do. It's the organisation, it's the passion, it's the commitment. Steve Borthwick's got them believing in things, not because, you know, of some hocus-pocus psychology stuff, but because it's just rugby. It's
and also, in the very best way, they are horrible.
They're horrible.
They are nasty, nasty men, and I love it.
And watch their mall setups. It is a thing to behold. The movement, the accuracy. Montoya is ace. Montoya is one of the best players in the Premiership.
Montoya and Dolly are two of the signings of the season.
Yeah.
They're brilliant signings. And the value compared to hookers of the last few years from Leicester is astonishing.
Yeah.
The way, I mean, we spoke about this upstairs, the way that Montoya, and actually Dolly was very good at the start of the season, which is keeping himself hidden, but the way Montoya finds himself on the edge of a mall.
Sneaking round.
Yeah.
And he sneaks it back round.
It's
for that try.
It's so obvious. You think that must be illegal. It's like watching the scorpion or the crab. It seems like an unfair advantage for the man with the ball just to say, right, I'm going to go over here now, away from all your prying hands.
Yeah,
but yeah, it wasn't Leicester's best performance. It probably was Bristol's best performance, and it still wasn't enough. And I don't think Leicester Tigers will ever lose a game again in the future of rugby.
Yeah,
until they get relegated.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, because they'll win everything.
They won everything then, but they'll be getting relegated. Can we just talk about the last try for a second?
Yeah,
because Leicester were down to 14 men because Jasper Visa was still off from that yellow card, which was stupid. Jasper Visa is such a good player, such an aggressive player, but he just every now and again does something needless and stupid, like clattering him to Sheedy after Sheedy. There was no way he was going to get Sheedy before the ball. He should have changed his direction, should have not touched him, and he just clatters into him.
Yeah.
Anyway, Guy Porter, wearing 23, is packing down on the blind side of the scrum at the start of that phase.
He is.
12 phases later, and Leicester have... What was remarkable about it was Leicester make 10 yards forward, then lose 20 yards back because of aggressive Bristol defence, then make another 10 yards forward, then lose 10 yards back, and then eventually, after 12 phases, create the 3-on-2 with some lovely forward hands and Freddie Stewart, basically doing what Randrandra had done for the Lloyd try, which was drawing in two defenders and offloading to Dolly.
Yep.
Dolly to Guy Porter. Easy try, game one. But for them to... When that phase started, Guy Porter was the blind side of the opposite wing. And because they've only got 14 players on the pitch, you could have drawn a 10-metre circle around that scrum and 13 of Leicester's 14 players were in that. And then to go from that condensed position 12 phases later to have stretched it with fewer players so that you have a numerical advantage on the opposite side of the pitch in that pressure was quite remarkable. It was an incredible finish to the game.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, isn't it? Basic skills done under remarkable pressure. And that's literally. I mean, for them to break the Bristol line in that situation only once in the game, and that's 4 minutes after time had gone. Hot, it's just absolutely heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking for Bristol. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's the kind of game that Bristol, well, last season would have won. This season, they are just not. But they're a lot closer in this than they have been in a lot of the games.
Yeah.
But then it comes back to a point that you made a few weeks ago, Jay, that Leicester are not smashing anybody. They are just getting the wins. They are just grinding out under what seems to be difficult circumstances against pretty much everyone.
Yeah. What they're doing is they're controlling how the game is played, I think. Because the kicking game is so good. Because the Moore game is so good. The set piece is so good. It makes a huge difference. And by the way, Sinclair, for the most part of Saturday, was it Saturday or Sunday? Sunday?
They played? Sunday.
Sunday. Got a good hiding from.
No, it was
edge.
Saturday. Saturday lunchtime.
No, Saturday. Saturday was Christmas Day, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So it was Sunday, yeah.
Yeah,
because the Quinn's game was the Monday.
Quite right.
Sinclair got a proper hiding.
Genge had the upper hand. I mean, the Leicester scrum had the upper hand massively.
Yeah. There's a few other interesting things about Leicester, which is obviously Visa didn't start. They are loving Rafael at the moment. He is playing some outstanding rugby.
Visa didn't start. Liebenberg, Kyle Brink is going back to the Bulls, is it?
Yeah.
Going back to South Africa.
He's got an early release.
Martin and Rafael are, considering how young they are, playing great stuff.
And Morrison gives you some great lineup options too.
Yeah.
As for Bristol, I think that we might be seeing a bit of the future of Bristol on the field, how they need to go about getting back to winning ways. I don't think it's going to be quick. I don't think they'll be a winning team. They certainly won't win it more games than they've lost this season. I think that's fine. I'm not sure they'll be a good team next season. But I think the future of their side has to be people like Fitz Harding, people like Sam Jeffries. And it's made me think that the good Premiership teams coming through now are going to be the ones that, like Leicester Tigers, are going very, very young and promote from within. And if you want to make some signings, you've got to be signing the absolute biggest internationals. You can't be messing around overpaying for solid Premiership players. My feeling
is, it kind of has been Bristol's approach.
It has, minus all the Fijians. And also, you know, they've got a few signings coming in next season. But I think, you know, they've got a great academy. There's no doubt they've got a really good academy.
Pinching players from other clubs will just become harder and
harder. I don't think anyone's going to do it eventually. And I mean, maybe someone runs out of contract and you pick them up. But I can't see anyone aggressive. I can't see many players getting to the point now that they are going to be released by clubs if they're of any value.
Well, it depends on, like you say, if there's a good young player coming through, you might go, actually, we could probably get away with, I guess, Leicester's a great example. They've got, Joe Hayes is a tight head, isn't he?
He is.
Who's that? Yeah, anyway, I was thinking Joe Hayes coming through, actually we can let Ellis Genge go. But if they decided to go, do you know what, Dan Cole, we're happy if you go, that'd be all right.
Kyle Brink would be a good example.
Great example.
Yeah, if George Martin and Rafael had turned out to be so good that, well, they planned on having four massive South African back rows, they can get away with three massive South African back rows. And if they bring a couple more lads through, they can windle that down
and
to two.
Basically, be playing a South African back row at 10 next year as well. So, you know, more of the same.
What else was there? Because Sale obviously got a for the battle for the King of the North.
just not the same now, though, is it?
No, it's not the same.
Not the same.
But it's good to see Sale living by their old traditions and partying in student halls once again.
Yeah,
must be.
Yeah, that's the only reason. Looking back on that. Seems ridiculous now, doesn't it?
I tell you what.
When people were up in arms about that.
Yes. They were with students.
They were partying with students. Are we responsible?
Prove it. Losers. So let's talk about Sale Sharks, who didn't play. There's no way I can just pan Bristol without basically saying exactly the same thing about Sale Sharks.
Well, they haven't played, so you've done it when they've played. So let's not go over ground we've already covered. Unless it's
I know,
new.
But this is kind of important, right? So
it's Sale chat, so it is important.
They've put themselves in a situation where they really needed that win. They've only got three wins. Only three wins, same as Bristol. And, you know, if you think Bristol have got problems rebuilding because they've got a few Fijians, well, you know, Sale have got one or two guys who are not necessarily 100% from the Northwest. I think they're in just as bad a situation as Bristol, and I think it's going to get worse.
We missed out on the Ferns Bowl.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure that they win this game up in Newcastle. Newcastle are legitimately very, very good.
Very well organised, very well drilled. You've got a big hard pack.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have plenty of chance to dissect Sale after the Exeter game this coming week.
Exeter game? No.
Sale Exeter at the weekend.
No, it's Bath Exeter. No, it's not. It's Bristol Exeter, isn't it?
Who have Sale got then? Sale Exeter, I thought.
Good question. We have got... English Premier
League. Oh, no, hold on. I've got that wrong, haven't I?
So I seem to think it's Sale Wasps.
Sale Wasps. Sorry, Exeter, my bad. Bristol.
My bad.
Yeah. So yeah. I knew Bristol needs to get back on the horse this week against Exeter.
Exeter, good luck.
Was there another game? Or was...
Yes. Yeah. Exeter. There was... Exeter had a bye week.
Ah.
Saracens hosted Worcester.
That's right.
And it was 61-28 it finished.
Yeah.
Oh, Saracens have swapped Northampton.
61-29.
Yeah, they've swapped Northampton for Worcester for the team that they pan when they need to hit reset.
Well, I mean, can I say that at least it's good they scored 29 points against Saracens?
Nah. Well, so...
No, you can't, can you? You're right.
There are positives to take out of this. They got... Well, in the end, they got 5 tries. They scored their fourth and fifth... I think they scored their... second, third, fourth and fifth in about the last 10 or 15 minutes because Saracens had basically given up and they were already in Oktoberfest in spirit, if not in body. There was a couple of positives from Worcester and they're 6-7. So Ted Hill was playing 7 and Kyle Hatherall was playing 6.
Is he a big strong boy?
They're both big, strong boys. They're both 6'4", 6'5".
Lovely.
Best part of 18 stone, each of them. And, as we saw later on in the game, both of them have a turn of pace. Both are quite explosive and were running in the open field and set up a couple of tries between them. They're the positives. Besides this, Saracens, their game out wide was too good. Mm-hmm. Their tight game was too good. Their defence was too good. Their kicking corners, they just...
It's too good. They were too good.
They've re-signed the Vanopoulos.
Yes,
I'm surprised.
I did not see that.
Yeah, I am surprised at that.
Can I just say something about Worcester? Right, they are making strides. There's no two ways about it. They are making strides. The media team there. You cannot put on your own Twitter account. It says something like, "Inevitably, Saracens score again." You're meant to be on the Worcester side. Like, you can't put that. You can't sound resigned on your own Twitter feed.
What score was it at that stage? Because if that's
it's
like,
honest.
If that's the third try,
just shut it down. Just close it down.
If it's the eighth try, like,
I have that picture. Do you know that picture of the girl with the chalk and the clown?
Yeah,
the old that used to be the little holding card on the telly when it was off air.
When you've conceded 40 points, that's all that your Twitter, your Twitter badge
you go,
like that.
For any more updates, go to @Saracens.
Now, if I said to you at the start of the season, there's going to be a cluster of teams, Sale, Bristol, Bath and Worcester, where do you think that they would be?
Well, if you'd said the first three of those, I'd say in the top four. When you throw Worcester into the mix, my spidey senses will start tingling.
You might just think, wow, Worcester have really turned the corner.
Yeah.
Maybe. The Sale Sharks were our favourites to finish top of the table.
I think you two both. I
definitely picked them top two, maybe first.
I did not have Sale in my top four.
I had a Bristol top four.
I had Bristol to win it.
I want to burn those predictions over there right now. Unfortunately, the audio record of it will last forever.
Forever.
I picked Bristol to win. I was certain that
I picked Sale to win. I picked Sale to win the Premiership this year.
You both did, I think.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, if I said Sale, Bristol, and Worcester will be in a group of three. You're like, wow. Really well.
Worcester have really overperformed this year. Not the other two. Not the other two have underperformed to that level.
Which kind of goes back to my point. Some questions need to be asked about Sale soon.
Yeah,
very soon. Although I've got another thought, and it's not about Sale.
Okay,
but in general. I wonder if our new rugby reality, the new normal, if you like, Tim, is fans have got to get used to being really bad 1 year and then really good the next year and then really bad again, because everybody is spending to... If this salary cap stays low and everyone spends up to it, it's perfectly conceivable, in my mind, that teams could get old from one season to the next, they could get figured out from one season to the next, a coach can make an impact.
Well, let's see how Exeter get on this season, because... Rob Baxter has been like the Bill Belichick in the NFL.
Yeah.
where, in spite of salary cap scenarios and the turnover of players, managed to always put a competitive team out on
not
the field.
Not Mark McCall, no?
I chose Rob Baxter because he did it from when they got promoted to
that
the
is
European
true.
Champions.
And also...
And year after year after
Mark
year.
Mark McCall and Farrell is a bit yeah. more Brady Belichick.
Yeah, that is more Brady. But yeah. Mark McCall did it at least on 3 years by circumnavigating the salary cap.
Mm.
No, I'm not saying that's Mark McCall's
decision. I only count
decision.
That in the Premiership. They still went on Europe three times, which is phenomenal. So, yes, I would say Mark McCall as well. But, yeah, that's why it's even more impressive when a team has a sustained period of success.
Yeah. And the last game, which we forgot about.
Zebra Benetton.
No. Wasps,
hammering.
Wasp London Irish.
Oh, yeah, good win for Wasps.
It's absolute clowns, London Irish. They are absolute clowns. Like, they are so... Some days I wake up and I think, yeah, do you know what? My top four predictions for London Irish looks really good. And then they do this.
I didn't see any of this game. Tell me about
it. Your team.
Creevy can't stop scoring.
When was the game?
Saturday afternoon.
There you go. I was working.
Sunday afternoon.
I was working.
Yeah, London Irish, they just play like a really, really good level six third team. You know, generally, like they've inherited all the players, all the ex-first teamers. They're there for a bit of a laugh. They throw it about. They can score hundreds of tries if they want. They're not that bothered.
On paper,
defending.
This would have been one of the games I'd want to watch. In fact, the game at Brentford Stadium towards the end of last season, it might have even been the last weekend or penultimate, was an absolute belter of a game.
Yeah,
was this one equally entertaining?
It was entertaining. Good game. Wasps, I think, always look comfortable. London Irish got a couple of late tries to make it look more respectable.
What was the Umunga red card for?
You know? Not seen it.
Okay.
The hookers, Frost and Creevy, got four tries between them. Both got a brace.
I bet Dan Frost is like, this Premiership stuff is easy.
Easy.
Like, how have I not made hundreds of thousands of pounds from Premiership rugby? It is so easy.
Nick Dolly, Dan Frost.
Yeah.
There's quite a few players that have just stepped straight in and gone, yep.
Yeah, massively.
To the man of born.
How old is Dan Frost?
Go on, be 32.
I'm going to guess 24, 25.
Yeah, that'd be my guess as well. I mean, Nick Dolly's still only 22, isn't he?
What?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nick Dolly's been around for so long.
24-year-old Frost.
What fixtures have we got this season? There was more games called off in the URC. Is it going to be... Oh, I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole. Let's just touch on it, though, because I think it might be one that rears its head. Is it going to be... I'm thinking of European competition and the Six Nations in a few months' time. Is it going to be especially awkward to fulfil fixtures in other countries?
Yes.
France? Probably. There could well be some sporting exemption, which kind of we did see that in the early, I want to say the early days, but when sport resumed in summer of 2020, there were... relaxing of fixtures for sports teams because there was more testing, blah blah blah. You might be able to get away with it, who knows, in France.
But also, am I right in saying there are going to be some rugby players who in about a week or two, about a couple of weeks time, will not be allowed to play professional rugby in France?
Yes.
Yeah,
so the regulations say you cannot play rugby in France if you're not vaccinated, professional or otherwise, and also people can't go and watch it.
Or otherwise.
Correct.
What?
So it's not just professionals, Tim.
I mean, professionals is abhorrent, in my opinion, doing that.
Professionals or otherwise.
Can't play amateur rugby at your local club?
That's how I read
it. Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, I wouldn't be enforcing it, but still.
Wow.
I know.
As the commissioner, you're not going to enforce this.
No, I would not be enforcing this. But it's awkward because, of course...
What would you... Okay, let's just play this... Let's play this out. If the UK government turned as fascist as the French one is...
Uh-huh. All bad ideas start in France, but yeah.
Yeah. If the UK government...
Champagne? That was a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it coming into Wales on Scotland first.
100%.
But if in England it went... full authoritarian, like they've clearly gone in France. And Tok H, what would you do as a man who puts a team out on the field on a Saturday?
Well, the problem is I wouldn't be allowed in that team, probably, because I'm not vaccinated.
Well, you don't have to say that.
No, I don't mind saying it.
It's no one else's business, which is kind of my point. If I was running a team, I think I would say it's absolutely none of my business what any of these players choose to do. That's between them and their doctor, and I'm not going to be the person saying, you can't.
If I was in that situation, that's exactly the stance I would... Because part of rugby, my relationship with my players and my friends is more important than, you know, adhering to RFU rules and laws. Simple as that. I always say that. I have no problem. Do you know when people get really angry, like, oh my God, he covered up for his friend? It's like, isn't that not what friends are for? Like, that's literally, I can never get angry about that kind of cover up. So yeah, I would happily.
Or you stand next to your friend and go, this isn't right, this isn't fair, I'm not going to have any part in this.
Yeah, or you do have a part by covering it up. So either or.
That's just outrageous. Anyway.
So
world's gone insane.
Yeah, it is pretty insane.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
But you know, look, this will be looked at as a case study as to how you don't persuade people to do things, and I don't think it's going to help vaccination rates. It's not going to help people who need vaccinations, because many people need vaccinations. According to,
there's an article on the Telegraph here that suggests that 98% of French professional rugby players in France are vaccinated. So if they're worried, if they're mandating it for the extra 2%, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, okay, so the problem here comes not for French players. I mean, there will be some French players this is a problem for. But it will come for England.
Yeah, any nations. Players who are coming across.
So the RFU are rapidly trying to find out, can Henry Slade travel and play? Or can someone else?
It's no play? Right, Henry Slade actually volunteered because of his diabetes and because of...
Bad reactions
to vaccines in the past, which is you don't need a reason, and I don't care what your reason is. It's absolutely none of my business. But Henry Slade did volunteer that information. But fundamentally, it's not the RFU's business. It's not anybody's business what anyone chooses to do. So Henry Slade came and volunteered it. But if there are other players in the England squad who are in the same situation, it's awful that becomes public property. They're private.
Yeah.
Well, I just find it all so distasteful.
In terms of rugby values, so-called rugby values, I hate rugby values, but one of the values of rugby is standing with your mates. I mean, I would be tempted not to fulfil the fixture if I was England.
I'm with you.
You can either have us all come over, or none of us. I wouldn't fulfil the fixture.
I actually completely agree. And it's not, and some people would say it's equating two things which are on totally different levels, and I can acknowledge that there might be a disparity in the... In the levels of this, but the principle is the same. It's the same as when you said we're not going to tour South Africa while apartheid was in place.
The principle
is important, and I'm tempted to go along with you. And I can imagine there would be England players who, that would send out a bloody message,
wouldn't it? Just
and I would be really proud of rugby if they actually said that. No, we're not playing ball on this, literally.
Mm. We'll see. I can't see it. I mean, I just can't see it.
I can see it getting a lot worse.
Yeah, I can see it in France being enforced. And if the French are doing it, then other people will want to do it.
Drakeford will be rubbing his hands.
Yeah, exactly. And Sturgeon.
Well, that's one story that tickled me, and it would be funny if it wasn't so tragic and utterly ridiculous. Is Caerphilly Rugby Club, who were following the new rules by Mr. Drakeford in Wales, and so had a crowd of 50 people watching Caerphilly's Welsh Premiership game, and had 150 people in the clubhouse watching on a big screen in which they were streaming the game to.
Oh, I'll tell you what Wasps did.
No. So that's following the rules. They were limited to 50 people watching the game
outside
in their stands. They had 150 people in their clubhouse watching the game that was happening right behind them, but had to be streamed on a screen. Yeah. It's just absurd.
So Wasps, when they made the semi-final, they had the home semi-final, didn't they? They finished second.
Yes,
against Bristol.
That's right.
So they had to get. I don't know if you've been to Wasps.
Yeah.
I've not been to the Recook.
So the corporate hospitality bit of Wasps is awesome.
Yeah.
And they got all these tables, and then they had to close the windows overlooking the pitch so people couldn't see.
Yeah, onto blinds the pitch, down.
And then put it on the screen. So they could pack out hospitality.
Yeah, yeah.
No one in the stadiums.
And it's rules like that that just contradict... Well, they contradict common sense. It just makes a mockery of the whole thing.
And that's why people don't listen to them.
Yeah, 100%. You just discredit the rules that do make sense by the dozens, it seems, that just make no sense.
I cannot and would not encourage breaking of rules because I can't because of the position I'm in.
But
I would totally understand it if people said, this is ridiculous, I am not going to do it. And if theoretically enough people of their own volition, not me advocating it, I am not advocating it, said, this is utterly ridiculous, doesn't make sense, I'm ignoring it. If enough people did, then it's unenforceable.
Isn't the scary thing about the pandemic how people just enforce their own rules? How we, you don't really necessarily need a police force or not. If it's a site.
Yeah, were you waiting for that announcement the other night before you made your plans for New Year? No,
absolutely not.
And if you were, then in the kindest way possible, you probably need to have a little look in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what my favourite jibe is when people say, oh, you're not an epidemiologist? I'm thinking, like, who says that? I mean, 2 years into the most severe crisis of our lifetime, probably the biggest crisis since the Second World War. We're 2 years in. If you've not read anything yet about this situation, I think that says more about you than it does me. If you're still trotting out, you're not an epidemiologist or you're not an expert, it says far more about you than
it does
about me.
There's been quite a few epidemiologists that have been horrifically wrong again and again and again. So that's no justification just to take someone's point of view. Yeah. Anyway, let's not go there.
But, yes. Hopefully, we can have a Six Nations.
Please.
And hopefully, we can have a Tier 2 tour.
We haven't seen Tier 2 tour. There's no way.
We need to make a decision location.
If it's going like this, it's going to be bonkers. What we may have to do is just say we're going to be in this city on this date, and maybe just. Anyone that's there, you're with us, and we'll have a great time. But it's hard to plan and booking a venue and paying for a venue and paying for equipment only for at the last minute it all to be pulled and we lose all that cash.
Well, we could go to somewhere like Plymouth Albion,
tier two.
Yeah, we could watch a whole Super Saturday.
Madrid or Lisbon for me.
I know.
Madrid or Lisbon.
We could circumvent all the rules and sail the Phyllis Mabel down there.
Is she going to be seaworthy?
Take a little. You know, maybe we crowdfund it.
I'll tell you what, Phil. Have a look at the the Super Saturday weekend. Just look at the Championship fixtures as a fallback position. That would, because if there's a great if there's a great if it was Ealing versus what are the other big contenders versus Doncaster, let's say. If there was a massive game like that on the Super Saturday weekend on the Sunday.
Well, we nearly went to Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That might be a shout. We could go to the place where Golden Wrists had his little golden wristy cuffs.
Very good.
Right. So the final weekend, 19th of March, we have Cornish Pirates, Ampthill, Coventry versus Jersey, Ealing versus Richmond, local-ish derby. Hartbury have got a bye, London Scottish versus Bedford Blues, and Nottingham versus Doncaster.
Not great.
Totally box office.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a good game there.
I think that's the final weekend of fixtures.
What about the weekend before? Just having a look.
12th, Ampthill, Ealing, Bedford, Coventry, Doncaster, Cornish Pirates.
That could be tasty. Well, I mean, that might just be worth going to anyway.
Jersey, Nottingham, Richmond, Hartbury. Okay. And London Scottish with a bye.
Well, maybe just as another thing, maybe on that one, the Doncaster v Ealing, is it?
There is a...
Doncaster
Cornish Pirates.
Doncaster Cornish Pirates. Might be worth just nipping over to Doncaster for that one anyway and letting people know we'll be there
Not too far, 12th of March.
Yeah, anyway.
I still want to go to Lisbon or Madrid.
Oh, I know.
I think we should discuss this off air.
Yeah, we should.
Let's do some predictions.
Yeah, come on then. What games we got?
Okay, we have got on Saturday the 1st, if it goes ahead, if they're not spending New Year's Eve partying in student halls, we've got Sale hosting Wasps.
Oh, they are. I got the invite. I'm going to that shindig. Yeah, it's Man Met this time. They got rumbled at Manchester University. They're going to Manchester Metropolitan University.
I think Sale.
Then Exeter hosting Bristol.
Exeter.
Jeeves. Then on the Sunday, we have 3 o'clock, Gloucester hosting Quins.
That's tasty, that.
That'll be interesting.
Really tasty.
Gloucester.
Quins, just.
If Marcus Smith is back, give me Quinns. Although, who needs him?
Exactly.
We have Leicester versus Newcastle.
Leicester.
Yeah.
Home win. Leicester.
And Northampton versus Saracens.
Saracens.
Should be Saracens. And then on the Monday, the 3rd of Jan, because it's a bank holiday, we have got London Irish hosting Bath.
Oh, London Irish West, London Irish East. Home
win. I think there's... Could be on for 6 out of 6 on the predictions there.
Irish. London Irish are going to run riot.
Could be an accumulator weekend,
yeah,
this one.
Maybe. Finally. There we go.
Well done. Well done, everyone. So,
odds on, it'll be 5 out of 5, and then on the Monday, London Irish will get a draw.
Yes, London Irish have ruined a few accumulators this year with drawing.
Right, get in touch with us. Contact deadchasers@gmail.com, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at jbeardmore, patreon.com/eggchasers. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.